provided by Thomas Allgaier and Frenis, based on the most relevant posts on LinkedIn about M&A insights in CW 37 and 38. Frenis is a B2B market research company supporting M&A consultancies with the market and competition perspective, for example, in commercial due diligences. Welcome back to The Deep Dive. This week, we're diving straight into what's been really moving the needle in the M&A world. We've sifted through LinkedIn insights from the last couple of weeks. Our goal here is to translate that feed directly into, well, actionable intelligence for you, whether you're in strategy, PE, VC, or consulting.
Exactly. And this isn't just a rundown of headlines. What we're seeing and what the sources really highlight is a market that demands real precision. There's a definite pivot toward strategic scale plays, a real need for discipline in diligence and integration. And then, of course, heavy action in sectors like cybersecurity and healthcare. We really need to unpack the so what behind these shifts. That's where the value creation or destruction happens.
Okay, let's kick off with the macro picture. Deal flow and market tone. The big takeaway seems to be strategic scale plays are front and center. Boards seem to be prioritizing fewer, more meaningful deals over, you know, just lots of small add-ons.
Yeah, it suggests capital's getting more selective. And the bar for, let's say, synergy potential, it's definitely higher.
Which seems to be having an effect on deal speed.
Yeah.
Like a bit faster execution.
It does seem that way, which is, well, a promising sign. Francisco T. pointed out average close times actually dropped about 4% in 2024. And in North America specifically, timelines went from, what, 271 days down to 250.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And it's not just admin efficiency. It probably signals more front-loaded diligence, more aggressive maybe, stronger buyer leverage earlier on.
Right. But that North American speed, it contrasts a bit with Europe, doesn't it?
It does. Europe held steady around 255 days. They're often dealing with, you know, complex cross-border disclosure rules.
And then you have emerging markets like India. CA Akash Kanduja mentioned something interesting there.
Yeah. The deal count in India is down, like double digits down.
But the values.
The transaction values are huge. We're talking, what, $50 billion in the first half of 2025 alone?
So fewer deals, but massive ones.
Exactly. That's India Inc. Moving away from that scattergun approach towards what you might call conviction investing.
Yep.
Big bets on strategic sectors, especially tech or renewables.
Which brings us back to valuation discipline, I suppose. High risk needs high conviction.
Absolutely. And the conversation around valuation isn't just about EBITDA multiples anymore. It's drilling down into earnings quality, concentration risk, and crucially, cash conversion. You know, trying to avoid those nasty post-close surprises.
And we also need to remember the M&A landscape isn't uniform. Edward Lent made a really good point comparing the huge deals we often talk about with Main Street transactions.
That's key. Those Main Street deals make up, what, 98% of U.S. businesses?
Huge number.
Yeah. And it's a totally different world for lower middle market funds. Mm-hmm. You're typically dealing with business brokers, asset purchases, single bidder negotiations, not auctions.
And the fees are different, too.
Dramatically different. Success fees average 8% to 15% on Main Street versus maybe 2% to 6% for the larger deals.
So deploying capital there means a totally different playbook. Relationship-based sourcing, different cost structure.
Right. That initial handshake, that trust is vital, which kind of leads us nicely into risk mitigation and diligence.
Jim Friesen emphasized the letter of intent, the LOI, saying a strong one can basically make or break a deal early on.
It really can. It's that first test of good faith, sets expectations, builds trust. A weak LOI might signal the seller's already hedging.
Okay, so trust is established. Then comes the firewall. Financial due diligence, FDD.
Yep. And Dhruv Malhotra from Alvarez & Marsal broke it down into three critical pillars, going way beyond just headline profit.
Pillar one, quality of earnings, QOE, making sure profits are real and sustainable.
Exactly. Not inflated by one-offs or, you know, pulling revenue forward.
Pillar two.
Net debt. This is where buyers can really get burned. Hidden liabilities, litigation costs, undisclosed debt. It all hits the equity value directly.
And the third one? Often missed.
Networking capital, NWC. You have to ensure that short-term liquidity number is accurate. If it's overstated, bang, you've got a cash crunch right after closing.
So the financials have to be rock solid. But David Hauser brought up culture.
Right. He argued culture is ultimately what decides if a merger sticks long-term. And that culture, it sits with the middle managers.
The ones translating strategy into action.
Precisely. If you sideline them during diligence and planning, you're basically planting cultural landmines.
Okay, and beyond culture, there are these specialized diligence areas, particularly for tech or brand-heavy deals, IP, for instance.
Absolutely critical. Mark Campagna stressed this. You need to verify the chain of title. Do they really own it? Check freedom to operate. FTO, can you actually use the tech without infringing?
And license transferability.
Non-negotiable. Owning IP isn't enough. You need to know you can legally deploy it day one.
That diligence mindset applies even to purely digital assets, right? Like domain names.
Definitely. Akos Bajorfi shared a great cautionary tale, the VigParkalo.hu parking garage case.
What happened there?
Buyer thought they bought the whole business. Seller intentionally left the domain name out of the asset purchase agreement.
Ouch. So they owned the garage but lost the website.
Essentially lost their digital front door. It shows domains are standalone assets. Asset deals must explicitly list digital keys for transfer.
The common thread here seems to be integrity, or lack thereof.
Absolutely. Brian Dukes mentioned deals falling apart post-LOI because of founder mistakes, missed forecasts, hidden issues.
Like undisclosed criminal charges, even.
Right. And Allison Dent's story really hits home on trust. A seller running a parallel process after signing exclusivity.
That kills the deal.
Instantly. Doesn't matter how good the financials look. Broken trust is, well, impossible to fix.
And that failure, whether it's diligence or trust, leads straight into why integration is so notoriously difficult.
Yeah. Oliver Knapp and Sviatoslav Burulin cited that famous stat, 50 to 70% failure rate in delivering expected value.
Thomas H. Kessler put it bluntly, deals fail on integration, not strategy. It's where the rubber meets the road, or doesn't.
So if integration is the make or break phase, you need quick wins. Tactical stuff.
Like procurement?
Procurement comes up again and again. Michael Jonas, Oliver Knapp, they highlight it as an immediate lever, potentially 10, 15% cost savings.
But where do those savings come from?
The key is overlap in non-core, non-strategic spend. Things like IT services, maybe real estate. You need structured category strategies to unlock it. But that's immediate cash to fund the harder parts.
Okay, so quick wins help, but you need structure for the whole process.
Thomas H. Kessler talked about three decisive leadership events: executive alignment, week one engagement, and synergy prioritization. Clarity on org design, decision rights that needs to happen before day one, week zero thinking.
And that week one engagement piece ties back to the middle managers again, right?
Exactly, David Hauser's point. You need them involved early. They're the trusted voice during uncertainty. Their buy-in prevents the whole thing grinding to a halt.
What about practical techniques? Especially if things are moving fast.
Anastasia B. advocated for a light integration in the first 100 days. Keep core systems running side by side.
Parallel systems.
Yeah, with simple data bridges for just the key numbers. Focus early standardization only on critical things like reporting metrics, supply chain visibility. Minimize that massive disruption full mergers often cause.
Sounds pragmatic. But integration also needs governance. Someone has to own it.
Absolutely. Danny Davis asked the right questions. Who's accountable for synergy delivery? Who owns the new budget? Where are decisions really made?
And Nicholas Yamaguchi offer that DOC model, deal intent, operating model, structure, external pressures.
Right. The point being, move beyond generic checklists. Tailor the integration strategy to the specific deal intent and its unique pressures.
Okay, let's switch gears to specific sectors getting a lot of attention. Cybersecurity is huge.
Massive day one priority. Buyers are really stressing cyber due diligence, data leak risks, integration dependencies. It's top of mind.
And the stats back it up. Shivoram Jay noted something pretty stark.
Yeah, 67% of M&A failures apparently stem from inadequate cyber due diligence. That's huge.
So where's the consolidation happening within cyber?
Focus seems to be on identity management, application security, and tools close to developers, things that help reduce complexity and that constant alert fatigue.
And AI M&A. That's a different beast.
Totally. Katya Pimanova explained that when you acquire an AI-first company, diligence shifts hard towards the tech itself. Source code, yes, but also lawful data ownership. Model governance.
Model governance.
Yeah.
Like bias and explainability.
Exactly. Plus the usual talent retention, which is maybe even more critical with AI experts.
And we're seeing deals happen.
Oh, yeah. Money's flowing. Nick Leongis, Daniel Kennedy mentions SentinelOne buying Prompt Security, F5 buying Calypso AI, and Mike Privet highlighted a really interesting one, Mitsubishi Electric buying Nozomi Networks for $1 billion.
A traditional industrial buying into OT security.
Exactly. Shows that convergence trend.
Industrial giants strategically moving into digital security at scale. Okay, let's pivot one last time. Healthcare and biotech also seeing strong activity.
Definitely. Despite the economic climate, there seems to be a renewed, almost aggressive appetite for late-stage assets.
What's driving it?
Big deals, often with creative structures. Alistair Matchett detailed Pfizer's planned $7.3 billion acquisition of Metsera,
the weight loss drug space.
Right. Largest deal there to date. But interestingly, it includes $2.4 billion in milestone-based contingent value rights, or CVRs.
So, sharing the risk.
Textbook example. Adapting deal terms because the asset valuation is inherently uncertain.
Any other big ones?
Anas von de Sadi noted Roche buying 89bio for over $2 billion. Again, big pharma showing sustained interest, especially at that interception of tech and biotech.
So looking back over these last 2 weeks, the big picture seems to be interconnectedness.
I think that's exactly it. M&A isn't just a series of steps. Success demands focusing on the whole system, how the pieces interact.
Which brings us to that final thought, referencing Kiesan Patel. M&A is definitely not a straight line LOI to close.
Not at all. He frames it as managing three interconnected levers, constantly feeding back into each other: deal structure, due diligence, and integration strategy.
Like a closed system.
Exactly. Change one, you have to adjust the others. Add CVRs to the deal structure like Pfizer did. That immediately impacts your integration timeline and maybe the depth of diligence needed on certain milestones. You can't manage it like a checklist. You have to manage it dynamically, always balancing those three things. It's a system.
If you enjoyed this episode, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other editions on private equity, venture capital, and strategy and consulting. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss our next analysis.